Welcome to the Plant-Based Canada Podcast. Join us as we talk with experts to explore the field of nutritional sciences and how our food choices impact our health and the environment. We sit down with Canadian doctors, dietitians, athletes, climate experts, and more to break down the evidence behind a whole foods plant-based diet and discuss the practical steps you can take in your effort to shift toward a healthier lifestyle. Today, I talked to Lucy Luong, a Californian turned Canadian registered dietitian and weight loss coach. She's passionate about people and wants to help everyone she can break free from ill health, excess weight, and food addiction. Lucy identifies as a volume eater and has a big appetite, so she loves that eating a plant-based diet allows her and her clients to eat large portions of nutritious foods. She has a virtual private practice in Alberta and an international virtual 12-week lifestyle improvement program that's open to anyone who needs help learning how to eat plant-based for weight loss and disease management. In this episode, Lucy and I discuss the science behind weight loss, the differences between Canada and the U.S. when it comes to their food guides and public health policies, her approach with clients and how she incorporates plant-based eating into her practice, and how she combats online misinformation around weight loss and other dangers that often accompany dieting culture. Lucy, thank you so much for joining the Plant-Based Canada podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Of course. So tell me first about your interest in food and nutrition. Did it start at an early age? What were some of the things that inspired you to get into this?
Yeah, well, I've always been a foodie. My focus definitely was not on nutrition at first. I was a big baker as a kid, and that's kind of what got me into the kitchen initially. I think it's because everybody loves sweets, right? Like everybody, it makes everybody happy to have, you know, brownies and cookies and everything at all of our events. So yeah, I liked being that person that got to bring a smile to people's faces. So yeah, again, like I said, that's what got me in the kitchen initially. But I would say growing up, I probably just was raised on the standard American diet. We had a lot of sweets and unhealthy food and sodas in our house. So I've always struggled a bit with my weight. But I was, you know, pretty active and in middle school and high school. I was in dance and this thing called color guard, which if any Americans are listening to this, they might know what that is, but Canadians are like, what? But yeah, I was in color guard. And so I was able to just sort of, yeah, keep up my activity and stay thin that way, I guess. But my main introduction to nutrition and dietetics actually came through a pamphlet that I was reading about my dream university. So I really wanted to go there and I was looking at all their majors and they said dietetics and they also had a degree in nutrition. And I was like, well, those sound kind of interesting. You know, I like to cook. I like being in the kitchen. And so I started looking into it and I felt like it would probably be a good fit after talking to the advisors there. And so that's kind of what I pursued. And after my first couple of classes, I fell in love and I've been passionate about nutrition ever since.
When did plant-based diets or vegetarianism kind of enter the picture for you? Was there any acknowledgement of plant-based evidence when you were going through your schooling as a dietitian?
Yeah, so I know for sure my first interaction with plant-based was I had a friend who went vegan when I was in middle school. And so that's what I always thought, like, you know, vegetarian or vegan meant was you just did it for the animals. But my other interactions, you know, I had one of my major undergraduate advisors slash teacher, she was a vegetarian, but she never pushed that on any of us. She just kind of was like, that's what I do. But she taught us everything, like kind of how you're supposed to be taught in school about how everything's healthy. And obviously a lot about veggies and fruits and healthy whole grains and all those things too. But I don't ever remember thinking that vegetarian or vegan was really like a dietary pattern that was to be like promoted. It was just sort of what people did. And we had to make sure as dietitians that we knew how to, you know, handle or counsel people who are vegetarian or vegan. Again, we always talked about the benefits of, you know, eating vegetables and fruits, whole grains, and probably even some beans, although I don't remember learning much about those until after. But we also talked a lot about the benefits of, you know, animal products as well. So we used a lot of meat and dairy in our cooking and our lab classes and, you know, just learn the benefits of lean proteins and fish and all those things as well. But lucky for me, I ended up at Loma Linda University. And so that's when I really came, face to face with all of the Adventist health studies and plant-based nutrition. I even had a class from Joan Sabate. He's the main professor who's kind of the lead author on all those papers from the Seventh-day Adventists. And so he convinced me to give up red meat. But I wasn't quite convinced that living plant-based was still like the desirable choice for me. It was just a viable option for people who had health concerns, especially. So I still was, more like lean meats, and I still had a lot of dairy in my diet at that point. But through that school, I got connected to some Seventh-day Adventists in Malawi, Africa. I went and stayed with them for a couple months, and they were the ones that were like, "What, you went to Loma Linda and you haven't heard of, Dr. Greger, and you haven't watched Forks Over Knives, and you haven't, read any of this research?" I mean, I told them like I had that class, but they were the ones that really pushed me into like exploring it more while I was there, and they fed me whole foods plant-based. And I have to say, my stomach did not love it at first. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, this is a lot of fiber. But I also was, through them, able to participate in the CHIP program, which is the Complete Health Improvement Program, which is run kind of through the Seventh-day Adventists mostly. Yeah, I got to see and experience sort of the beginning of the transformation. I wasn't there the whole time that they were doing the program, but yeah, I was pretty convinced after that point that plant-based was the best way to go. So I came home and I was vegetarian, and then eventually I made the commitment, if I'm going to be a dietitian, I feel like I gotta go plant-based.
What state are you originally from?
I'm from California.
Whereabouts in California? Because I know, I guess it's perceived that more people in California are more health conscious, or I guess there's, I'm sure in like LA there's a big vegan population, but I'm from Indiana in the Midwest, and it's just all red meat and potatoes. So I'm just curious, kind of what you grew up eating.
Definitely California has that perception. We always think of the coast when we think of California, but California is a really big state, and when you go inland from the coast at all, like, you really end up in, I won't say like poorer areas, but definitely less, sort of more of that mentality. It's like kind of middle class to, yeah, just, I don't know. There's a lot of fast food. There's a lot of just kind of cultural foods as well, because I grew up around a lot of African Americans, a lot of Hispanics, and those are two populations, unfortunately, even though their diets started out more plant-based when you think about their origins. But once they come to America, they usually end up eating a lot more meat, tacos, and just a lot of meat and dairy. And even though it's hard to believe, because I never really thought of it, but it is a bit of a food desert, because I mean, I couldn't walk to a grocery store. It was so far from my house. So yeah, there's a lot of people that just kind of ended up needing more of the convenience food to get by. So
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize how massive California is, and it's not a far stretch to realize there's food deserts there as well. So you're from the US and now you're in Alberta, which is very different from California. What sparked the move?
My husband is from here, and so he's from Calgary originally, and when we were dating long distance and we were trying to figure out where our next move was going to be, I was just finishing up school, and he already had a job here, so it kind of just felt like it made more sense for me to move here. Also, immigration's a bit easier coming to Canada than a Canadian coming to the US. So yeah, that's how I ended up here. But I actually love it. Winters and all.
I've actually never been to Alberta yet. I've only been living in Canada for about 5 years, and I can attest to it being easier to come here than for my wife to go to the States. But I've only seen a couple of provinces like Ontario, Quebec, Nova Scotia, and BC, but I have not seen Alberta yet, but I really want to. I hear it's beautiful. A lot of the mountain ranges and things look really pretty.
Oh yeah. Yes, it's gorgeous.
So you've lived in the States, you've lived in Canada, you've been in the health and nutrition spaces, I guess, in both of these countries. Can you walk me through maybe some of the differences between the two, some of the weaknesses and the strengths? And then especially, I'd like to know your take on the differences between the food guides in each country.
Yeah, so in preparation for our talk today, I actually went back and reviewed the food guides of the two systems, kind of take a look at what was being promoted by both governments and both major dietitian websites for the US and Canada. And what I noticed right off the bat was the simplicity of the Canadian food guide. So all you have to do is like go to the website and you're greeted with this colorful plate of healthy plant-based foods, like a lot of healthy plant-based foods. You see fruits and vegetables, whole grains. And while there are some meat and eggs and dairy options like on the plate, it's not center. It's not like this is what makes up a healthy meal. It's just kind of like this is an option for some protein. And so it's also like it's they have other things on the guide. Like it's important to be mindful when you're eating and, you know, cook at home more often, enjoy your food and eat meals with others, use food labels, and limit highly processed foods. And there's even a tidbit about how marketing can influence our food choices. So it's just like very accessible. And those information's like you just click on those and you open it up and you can read right there on the website. So I felt like, you know, I have a master's in public health from Loma Linda. So it's like from the public health side, it's like, wow, this is just so much more accessible to people. However, when you go to the US guide, it's very like the website is not as friendly. It's not very user-friendly. And you end up having to like download the guide and open it. And it's 165 pages or something crazy. And so like who's gonna be reviewing all of that? And like, you know, it's mostly the people that are preparing stuff for other people. Like it's rarely ever the Americans that are going and looking at that guide. It's usually like dietitians or people who are working in schools who are like using that to create curriculum and stuff. And then like it's just very wordy. And so the language isn't very accessible to the mass public. You know, I pulled some of the phrases off of it and it's like focus on meeting group food group needs with nutrient-dense foods and beverages and stay within calorie limits. Like I can barely understand what they're trying to say in that sentence. So I can imagine that, you know, the mass public is going to have a harder time. Another phrase was dietary components of public health concern for underconsumption. So inadequate intake of nutrient-dense foods and beverages across food groups have resulted in underconsumption. And they're just trying to get across that we're not eating enough fiber and vitamin D, but it's like they're just making it so wordy. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, they have so many people they're trying to please, because we know that the food guide comes from the USDA and that's where they're handing out subsidies and you know, they're trying to appease both the ag industry while also creating this nutrient guide. So they have to be very careful about their language, where I know that some of that's true here in Canada as well, but I just feel like their sort of nutrition umbrella is maybe a little bit clearer. They're like actually concerned with the health of their population. And maybe that has to do with the public health care and stuff, because they know if they take it seriously, then they can save money in public health care. So those are kind of the things I notice about the food guides. When it comes to the dietitian websites, I know the US one is Eat Right. But yeah, the public face of the Canadian one, it was also greeted. Like there was a lot of stuff about the Mediterranean diet and plant-based diets because, you know, it's kind of a hot topic right now. So it was nice to be greeted with that. Like if you're looking for information on healthy food and you go to the Dietitians of Canada, like public website, then you're going to get pretty much information about plant-based eating and eating more fruits and veggies. And I felt like that was really good. There was only a couple articles on cheese and dairy. And yeah, the Eat Right one in the US is had a little bit more about meat. I thought what was interesting was when talking about protein on the Canadian site, they always listed the plant-based proteins first before then listing the lean meats. But then in the US, it's the lean meats first and then all of the plant-based proteins. So it's just like it's just that little switch, you know, it's like what you're promoting first, I guess. Or what you're kind of saying is the best source can really change people's perspective, right? Because now people are going to look, oh, well, if dietitians are saying that lean meat is the best protein choice for me, then I should choose that. Whereas here in Canada, it's like, oh, well, maybe beans are the best choice for me. I should start eating more of those. So it's an interesting dichotomy in those two areas of the food guide. I feel like Canada's kind of got that public health, like accessibility side to it, got that handled better. But when it comes to sort of the feel of nutrition and just people's take on it in both countries, I see that there's a lot of people taking nutrition into their own hands. And in some ways, that's good because government publications aren't always going to have truly our best health at heart. But in other ways, it's very disconcerting because people don't believe dietitians or government specialties anymore. So if you're a government regulated profession, a lot of times people just think you're a puppet and you're not going to say what's actually true. And so then we see this reverse where lots of people are trusting people that have no training on YouTube to give them the best advice about nutrition instead of somebody who's gone through 7 years of nutrition education like myself. And so it's kind of interesting. There's people, you know, taking it back and saying, geez, the government should be giving us more information about true nutrition and real public health, like nutrition for the mass public. And then others are like, we can't trust anything that the government's saying here or in the US. And so there's kind of an interesting dichotomy and shift in that way.
The nuance is really interesting point that you make, because you never want to be, it's great that Canada's more simplistic, especially in the sense that they removed the lobbyists from the latest food guide. I don't know if that's going to be true in the future, but they at least did that for the most up-to-date one. And that, it, like you said, it's very different. It's accessible. They list the plant-based proteins over the meat, and it's reversed in the States. But then you've got the lobbyists and everyone else involved with that food guide. Nuance is super important, because things aren't always just black and white, as maybe some people that aren't trained want to think. But at the same time, when you just pummel people with so much information, like the US food guide, then it's just like, I give up. There's no point in me reading it. I don't understand it. Like you said, you didn't even understand some of those sentences. So that's a really hard line to walk, I guess, to be like a science communicator too. And nutrition, it's silly. It's just as political sometimes as some other things. People want to believe, you know, there's the cognitive bias. So that's really interesting. What's it like as an American dietitian working in a Canadian environment? Do you think it's noticeably different? Are there noticeably different things between the two that you've noticed? Or is it more of just phrases and things like that that are different that you have to get used to?
Well, so when I moved here, I had never worked in the US as a dietitian aside for in my training. And so, you know, I had done hospital work and school work and everything in my internship, but I pretty much moved here right after I passed the US exam. And so I never got into the working life there. But from what I could say, the hospital system, I actually worked for one that was a Loma Linda hospital. And so they were a little bit more open to you promoting a plant-based diet and stuff. But sadly, in the hospital system, their food was still not 100% like what I would like to see in a hospital, right? Still a lot of animal products and stuff on their plates, which is surprising given that they're mostly plant-based eaters, that they would be serving people animal products. Anyway, that's just a addendum. So anyway, I think I generally was just kind of feeling like I, with my public health specialty, I wanted to take a larger approach and not just focus on the one person in the hospital, but hopefully try to take on more of the whole system and teach people about prevention. And so it's really interesting moving here. It's really hard to get into the public health care system unless you've kind of worked there, you have an in with somebody. And I knew I could get hired, but again, I didn't really want to go work in the hospital for 5 years just so I could get a community job. And so that's sort of directed me towards private practice and just having the flexibility to have my own hours with my daughter. So all that to be said, I haven't worked exactly the traditional dietitian, but I feel like my interaction with dietitians here has been a little bit of a pushback against my sort of extreme, quote, extreme ideas of like plant-based being best for everybody. I think everybody here is a little bit more moderation is the approach, and we should be focusing more on healthy relationships with food and getting away from eating disorders and things like that, rather than promoting more of a plant-based diet. And so, again, I haven't interacted with too many dietitians. And yet there's also, I mean, I've interacted with Brenda Davis. I don't know if you know her, but she's a really well-known plant-based dietitian, and she lives here in my city now. So there's also those inspiring people in Canada as well here. And you've interviewed many of them that are taking on the system in a sense.
Yeah, we've had Brenda. She spoke at one of our conferences. She's really great. She's really nice too. Really sweet person.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So sweet.
Let's talk about your practice now then. So how do you incorporate, like you said, you kind of get some pushback here and there from some colleagues. How do you incorporate plant-based eating into your practice now? And I guess what's the reception with them?
Well, I never wanted to do a bait and switch. So if I was going to be telling people to eat plant-based, I wanted to be quite upfront about it. So it's on my website and everything that I teach more of a plant-based approach. And so a lot of my clients actually find me because they're looking for a plant-based dietitian, and I'm one of the only ones that pops up on Google in this area. And so So most of them know when they come to me, they're learning to eat more plant-based, but I've definitely gotten some calls through more of the insurance websites where people are like, you know, I just want to learn to eat better. And then I kind of say, okay. And I do sort of incorporate more of a plant-based diet. You know, I don't tell you that you have to stop eating these things. That's just kind of more of the counseling approach that I take. And I definitely have people that don't call me back or don't end up signing up for sessions because I say stuff like that. So yeah, it's interesting. I think I probably would have had a much more successful practice at this point if I was just sort of more of a everything in moderation kind of dietitian. So there's that side of it. But my conscience tells me I can't promote any other way of eating. This has to be it. So
you've created a specific program for those interested in both plant-based diets and weight loss. Can you tell me more mm-hmm. about that program and maybe some of the stories, the anecdotes that come along with it?
This is a pretty new program. I've been doing it since about January, but it is a weight loss program with obviously the plant-based element. And it's all, you know, we talk a lot about how real success in weight loss starts in our minds and how we think a lot and relate to food and in our mindset. And so it's a weight loss program, but I would say that my main focus is getting people to sort of rewire the way that their brains process nutrition information. And so I sometimes say I really want to get people, I want to give people their own nutrition degree. I want you to feel like you can walk away and have a really solid knowledge base to draw from when you're making your own decisions for the rest of your life. So again, we talk a lot about mindsets behind good nutrition. And so far, this has been the best feedback I get from people is they love my approach of just developing a healthy relationship with healthy food. And so even though not everyone is able to see sort of that amazing weight loss transformation, they've all walked away so far with this enlightenment around the way we think about food and health, which then is leading them into success further down in the road. So that's really good. One of my big mottos is you have to start losing weight the way you plan on keeping it off. So I didn't want to create a program that was just like fast and dirty results where you eat even the most like strict plant-based diet in order to see the quick results. I'm really like focused on setting more of this path that and building habits that's going to lead you to see those kind of dream results, even if it takes a year or two. Yeah, then the rest of the program, after kind of building up the healthy relationship and the mindset around food, we dive obviously into all the nitty-gritty, the elements of transitioning to a plant-based diet. And we have a 12-week meal plan so you can learn how to cook a lot of really good recipes. I think they're good. They're the ones that I rely on pretty much a weekly basis. So I haven't been the best at following up with my clients, but I know that in the program, I've definitely had some people have some success. So one client, she was able to lose 11 pounds in just a couple months. And that was all without increasing her exercise because she had ankle surgery that she was recovering from. And so just learning to eat more, just adding in more fresh produce pretty much to her diet, she was able to lose weight so effortlessly. Another couple that joined, they're still losing and they've lost over 30 pounds together. And a current client that I'm currently working with, she saw weight loss before she even joined my program because she came from one of my free challenges. And so you can know it's working if they're not even paying you and they're losing weight. So that's one of my favorites. I've also personally lost around 30 pounds. And so all the principles that I'm teaching my clients, like I currently struggle with, because like I mentioned, growing up, I always had sort of a weight challenge. I was never severely overweight, but I always struggled with sort of that healthy relationship with food and not, I won't say I ever had like a binge disorder, but definitely liked eating junk food and sweets especially. And so everything that I teach my clients, I feel like I can personally relate to. And in the end, I'm just hopeful that they'll walk away with this perspective of sort of having peace with food again and being able to look at unhealthy food and not even feel like it's desirable to them. So yeah, that's kind of my program. It's called Ditch the Disease because even though it's a weight loss program, I really want the focus to be on prevention and just getting yourself to your healthiest, you know, weight and internal health so that you can live into your 80s and 90s and age really gracefully.
Well, that's good that you kind of walk the talk as well. I bet that that's probably pretty endearing for some of your patients to see you also following the same path. probably gives them more conviction to follow through. You mentioned the nitty gritty earlier. I want to get into some of that. There's so much confusion, as you kind of alluded to earlier, about weight loss, the science behind weight loss. You've got experts talking about it and people that are in the trenches doing the studies. And then you've got people who have no background in any nutrition or dietetics, and they're online on Instagram, on YouTube, telling thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people, potentially dangerous things to do to lose weight. Mm-hmm. And the tricky part is that you can do one thing and lose weight short term, and you can do the opposite of that thing short term and lose weight. So I know it's a wilderness out there for some people. So what really is, kind of walk us through what the actual science is behind weight loss and whether it's really as simple as what we've heard before, calories in, calories out.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking this, because I love talking about it. So it is in some sense a matter of calories in and calories out, but many people still use calorie deficits and they don't see any progress. So obviously we know there's other factors, and it can range from, you know, not having enough fiber in their diet to being inflamed, exercise, hunger and satiety. Like, there's really a lot of elements to weight loss. And so there's, yeah. So really it's complex. And like you said, it's really hard for people to navigate on their own. And so, I'm happy to be a voice in the space that can just sort of simplify it for people. And it really is quite intuitive if you think back to it. So the diet that most people on earth were consuming before the obesity epidemic happened, it was a diet centered on whole foods, right? With a much smaller consumption of meat, of dairy and eggs. So even though while we were eating those things, we were eating, you know, pounds of them, not hundreds of pounds of them a year. And so we also knew where our food was coming from, and it wasn't scientifically engineered to be addictive, right? Like it is today. Yeah. When it comes to sort of the best diet for weight loss, in my perspective, like I said, you have to start losing weight the way you plan on keeping it off. So if you're trying some of these quick and dirty things like keto or even a calorie deficit or carnivore or whatever the trendy diet is, Slim Fast or Weight Watchers, like whatever it is, if it's not sustainable for the rest of your life, then in my mind, it's not a good diet. It is a diet. It's not a lifestyle. And so I'd much rather take the lifestyle approach and let's focus on how we used to eat as a population and how the healthiest people on the planet eat. Obviously, we know a lot about the blue zones. And when we look at them, those populations are usually a healthy weight, and they usually have no diseases like diabetes and heart disease and Alzheimer's and dementia. All those things don't exist there. And they also just, you know, happen to eat a lot of plants and a lot of starches, especially. And so, starch-based, plant-based diet is really the best solution for weight loss in my mind.
One thing that comes up a lot in the conversation around weight loss is calorie density versus nutrient density. Nutrient density gets a bit of a focus when we're talking about plant-based diets. Can you tell me what role plant-based diets play when it comes to this? And I guess, especially why it's important when it comes to considering your long-term health and not just a short-term, I need to lose a couple pounds in a couple weeks type thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So people often separate out nutrient density and calorie density, but I see them as the same thing. However, many people will consider meat like a nutrient-dense food or eggs a nutrient-dense food because they have a lot of amino acids and iron and vitamins. But nutrient density doesn't address it. It's sort of like a simplistic view because we're only looking at vitamins and minerals per se. But what we know now is that we have a very highly symbiotic relationship with phytonutrients, which are the plant-specific nutrients that we don't even know much about these days, but we are coming to understand their vital importance in our life. And also we have this really symbiotic relationship with fiber. So if you ever are trying a diet without a lot of fiber, where you're going in, you're kind of going back to more animal products instead of whole grains and veggies and fruits, then you're probably going to end up with, maybe you'll end up with some success with weight loss, but you're going to end up with some other chronic conditions that come from inflammation and having more of those products in your diets. And so to me, it's not a long-term solution. But anyway, to speak to the importance of calorie density when trying to lose weight, our bodies actually crave 3 to 4 pounds of food per day. So whole foods are usually the ones that are higher in water and fiber content. So that dilutes the calories. It makes them more favorable for weight loss. So you can fill your stomach and really stretch out your stomach and send off all those signals to your brain that you've eaten a nice big meal. And that works with your hunger drive, and it helps, you know, give you that sense of satisfaction after every meal. Or you can continue to eat these higher calorie foods, which are ones that usually come from animals or are processed. So anything that's been processed, even if it's a plant-based food like, you know, avocados, if it's turned into oil, it's been processed into oil, it's going to be higher in calories. And so we really should be focusing on adding in more of the calorie dilute plant-based foods, and especially how as close as they can be grown to nature. So, you know, instead of an applesauce or a smoothie, then we should really be focusing on adding in the whole food if we can. And so overall, the skinny on weight loss is we should be focusing on adding in more weight and bulk from the plants. And so that satisfies our hunger drive, stretches out our stomach, and we stay low in calories. Other diets work short term, but again, nobody can stay on keto or carnivore long term without health consequences. So eating a low calorie dilute plant-based diet is really the only way I've seen that works for long lasting results. It's really the only diet where, in my mind, you can start it. You can start eating plant-based, and it's something you can keep doing for the rest of your life. You end up satisfied. You can eat really large portions. I call myself a volume eater because I literally could eat like a huge plate of food every single meal, and I could still have snacks in between. And so a lot of us are volume eaters. So being told to portion restrict and, you know, eat small portions and cut calories to lose weight or to exercise a lot, that's just not appealing to us, and it's not sustainable long term. So if you're a big eater like me and you have a big appetite, especially if you're a man, that's one person that feels like, you know, usually they like to eat more food than than a diet is going to tell them to eat, then this is a really good solution because, like I said, you can eat a lot of volume and have the calories stay low. So, and again, like you said, it's not just the short term. You're focusing on actually reducing your inflammation, and you're protecting yourself from all those chronic diseases of aging. So it's really like the best of both worlds.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if there's a benefit to reducing your risk of things like diabetes, heart disease, why not do that? You mentioned volume eating. I definitely think I'm one of those, but I think I load all my calories in the evenings. I tend to not be that hungry during the mornings and lunchtime. And then at night, which is probably bad, maybe. I don't know. You would know better than me in terms of timed feeding, I guess, or what the science is behind that. But I just eat all at night. It's like I kind of forget during the day, and then I just volume load at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So with calorie density and weight loss, so on the flip side of that, what I'm curious about now is foods that might promote weight gain. So what are some, you kind of mentioned a little bit about it when you were talking about the processed foods and oils and things, but what are some foods or ways of eating that can potentially hinder a person from losing weight? I'm thinking of a lot of phrases I see online, like people telling other people to avoid fat and sugar, or as you mentioned before, the bane of your existence, everything in moderation.
Mm-hmm. It's just so funny because that's exactly how when I was in college, I was eating everything in moderation, but you know, I lived on a hilly campus, so I was able to keep like quite slim from just like walking everywhere, even with a cafeteria full of ice cream and baked goods and stuff. And also there's something about being in nutrition class that just gets you to eat healthier. But then when I moved back home and I was trying to live by the same principles of everything in moderation with a pantry full of, you know, chips and cookies, like it just did not work for me. So anyway, going back to what you were saying, like what foods are higher in calorie density? So we know, I didn't really go over it in the last section, but fruits, I think, are under 200 to 300 calories per pound of food. So our calorie density is really the volume or the number of calories per volume of food. And so fruits are under 300, veggies are under 200 calories per pound, starches are under 700 calories per pound, legumes are under 800, somewhere around there. I'm not probably super accurate about that. But when we switch over to plant-based or animal-based foods, even the leanest meats are usually over 700 calories or 600 calories per pound. So, and nobody wants to eat a pound of fish anyway. Wouldn't taste very good, and your stomach would probably feel quite overwhelmed. But it's super easy to eat you know, a lot of chips, and because there's no water in them, like it's all been dehydrated and fried, you're getting a lot of oil with that. And oil is one of the most calorie dense foods on the planet. It's got 4,000 calories per pound. And so anything that's been fried is going to be high in calories and it's going to be unsatisfying. So it's super easy to fill your whole stomach, to not feel like you've eaten a big volume or a big weight of food, and yet to have over exceeded your calorie intake for the entire day in one sitting. And so that happens with anything that's been processed, whether it's baked goods or it's fast food restaurants or it's chips or it's, you know, even nuts and seeds. Like you can overdo it on those too as a plant-based eater, or avocados and things that are even good sources of fat. Fat is higher in calories. So unfortunately, we can't eat too many of them if we're trying to lose weight. But yeah, kind of going back to everything in moderation. So I've had a really hard time identifying people that are overweight and are capable of eating everything in moderation. Usually the people that are capable of eating everything in moderation don't end up being overweight in the first place, right? Because they're sort of those naturally slim people that are like, yeah, I can just have one, like the Lay's commercial, right? Like I can just have one and I'm fine. So usually those people were kind of like, you know, raised in an environment where maybe there was junk food, you know, present, and they were kind of able to like hash out their relationship with food. But a lot of us who end up with more weight on our bodies, we've kind of come from either a restrictive background or a background that's, you know, where we only knew one way of eating, which was like processed food. And that was all we had in our kitchens when we were growing up. So to tell somebody who's struggling with sort of that food addiction or binge-like behavior to have everything in moderation is totally a recipe for disaster. And everyone's moderation is different, right? So my current idea of moderation is having a little bit of dark chocolate every day, but another person's is probably having a whole Snickers bar, a whole ice cream, and a whole bag of chips in one day, right? That's a little bit of everything, right? But not all plant-based diets are optimized for weight loss. So even if you are going plant-based, there's always a, you always have to kind of be mindful of the things that you're eating, because things like tortillas or chips or bread, nuts and seeds and avocados, these are all things that are part of a plant-based diet and yet are more calorie dense. And so when we think about our bodies wanting 3 to 4 pounds of food per day, it's really hard to meet that volume of food with processed food. Unfortunately, we just end up exceeding our calorie allotment for the day. And so if you're hoping to lose weight on a plant-based diet, we do need to focus on more of the whole natural foods, stay away from processing as much as you can, or if I say it, process it yourself. So if you're making flour, try making your own oat flour from oats in your Vitamix or your blender. Or if you're making guacamole, try making it yourself, because the process is just going to be more wholesome and you can add stuff to it to kind of dilute the calories rather than the kind you get from the grocery store that's just straight avocados and they might even add oil to it or something like that. Also learning to steam your foods and enjoy sort of their natural flavor has been a really important tip for myself, actually, because I always used to think I had to roast veggies like in the oven or the air fryer and season them and put oil on them. But I've learned to just kind of appreciate the natural flavor of steamed vegetables and fruits and just even baked potatoes or something really simple, like a sweet potato that has peanut butter in it or something like that. It's just like the simplest meal, but it's almost as satisfying as a big bowl of oatmeal, you know? And again, like I mentioned, limiting our intake of nuts and seeds is also important. So yeah, simplifying things, getting back to how they're grown in nature, relying more on the whole food version rather than a processed version of a fruit or vegetable or grain. That's really the best advice that I can give for learning how to eat for weight loss.
You've made it clear that the more whole you can get the food, the better. More fruits, vegetables, moderation of nuts and seeds, focused on plant-based proteins. However, I notice a lot with marketing that there's, you know, specific brands or diet plans, and then they sell certain products that are low in fat or diet sodas or like the special snacks or protein bars or whatever it is. They're always marketed a certain way, highly processed, probably frozen food kits, things like that. I can imagine what your take is, but what's your take on that? especially given, I guess the way I think about it is like, oh, maybe that will help a person lose weight, you know, in the short term, But in the long term, they're relying on something that, like you said, like if you're not intending to stay the course and it seems like a short-term solution, I guess that's when you get the yo-yoing, and that could potentially be bad too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yo-yo dieting and weight gaining is very demoralizing for people. And they start thinking that it's their body that's broken, or their self-control, or their relationship with food. And they start thinking it's me. I have all these problems wrong with me. And it can be very demoralizing and lead to a lot of just kind of, I'm just going to give up and eat whatever I want. And who cares if I'm overweight or whatever. And so I really hate that sort of marketing in this industry is creating that in people, because this is one of my new catchphrases. It's not the diet, it's you. It's not you, it's the diet that's broken. Sorry, I said that wrong. It's not working for you. You're not working for it, right? Like the diet is never designed to help you lose weight long term. It's only designed to get people money. And maybe, maybe when they started, some of these people had the best of intentions. Like, I want to help people like feel thin and trim and happy. But in the end, it's probably turned into sort of a marketing scheme and a money scheme. And so we spend billions of dollars on it every year on weight loss products and weight loss services and gym memberships and all of these things. And yet so many of us are still struggling with weight. It doesn't seem to be working, right? We're spending more money on it than ever before. And yet we're more overweight than we've ever been in our history as North Americans. And so you have to, like I said, and you said, you have to start losing weight the way you plan on keeping it off. So all these short-term meals, drinks, snacks, supplements, they're not going to work long-term. And, maybe some of them can, or they're intended to, but again, nobody has an endless pocketbook that they can just dish out money on Jenny Craig or an expensive supplement for the rest of their life. So actually, if you're going to spend money in the weight loss industry, I'd much rather you spend it on something like this program or the e-certificate from Cornell or whatever it is that's going to help you with the learning side of it, because then you have all of that in your brain. You don't need to buy anybody else's method or anybody else's supplements. You can just decide for yourself. Like I said, you have your own nutrition degree, you have your own nutrition mindset, and you can start having a healthy relationship with food and even the unhealthy foods, and be able to just sort of live in the world that we live in, because it's never going to get easier. I mean, I think there'll be more plant-based foods and there'll be more people that are eating that way, but there's still going to always be these hyper-addicting, like processed foods available to you. And it's really about learning to navigate the system, navigate the grocery aisles, so that you can walk away from that. Like now I'm not even intrigued at all. Like the chip aisle, I'm like, yeah, I don't even think about it. Before I might be like, ooh, do I want chips today? Like, I was never really super addicted to chips because I'm more of a sweets person, but now I walk past and I'm like, I'm just so excited to go buy more peaches. Like I love peaches. They're in season right now. So
it's funny you mentioned Jenny Craig, and I just had a rush of memories come back to me as a kid seeing family members subscribing to the Jenny Craig diet. And I remember aerobic classes being a kid and like sitting in the corner while my mom did aerobic classes. And then also I remember a lot of slim fast drinks all over the place at my grandparents' house, all these different products that kind of infiltrated decades and decades of my family members' lives. And they never really, maybe for a couple of times, a short period of time, but it never really long-term stuck. It never really worked. They did it for decades, some of them. So, which is really powerful. I know that's an anecdote, but it's still, I remember it very well, all those products. So I know that, especially with things like Instagram and YouTube, and Facebook, social media, there's a focus on the focus on weight can be kind of a source of anxiety and lead people to mental health concerns, especially for women, I think, and young girls we see. Can you talk to me about your approach to dieting culture and body dysmorphia if you have a patient who might have background in that, and why it's so important to discuss this with them?
Yeah. This is so crucial. And I can't tell you how many women that I'm meeting online who have just been on diet after diet, chasing their dream body weight. And some of them like are actually quite thin and healthy looking to me. And yet they're still like, oh, I'd love to lose 5 to 10 pounds. And I'm kind of like, well, I get that. You know, sometimes I still like have that five pound goal, and that's a good thing to work towards. But I do think some people are chasing this elusive body image, and it's unfortunate that, you know, we've created a society like this. But actually, I think that this is where I say working with a dietitian can actually sort of set the tone for a transformation into plant-based eating a little differently than maybe working with a doctor. Like, no offense, but Dr. Furman, he's quite black and white. And maybe some of these other ones too, like Dr. McDougall, you know, they're quite like this or nothing. And I don't know how many of them are addressing the sort of psychological things that are going on behind. I know that McDougall has Lyle to help him with that too. But anyway, I definitely see the need to work on healing our relationship with food alongside making the transition to eating healthy food. Like, this is something that several of my current clients are working on. They're just like, it's so hard to break away from the diet mentality that's telling me to eat less. And here you are, you're telling me to eat more. And it's so hard to like be okay with a big plate of food. And I'm like, yep, it's a really a challenge. And so my approach is basically, I want to teach people to learn to love themselves, not by giving in and just splurging. Like we always say, oh girl, treat yourself or whatever it is, and go get yourself that Starbucks or go get yourself whatever food you're craving. But actually when you make peace sort of with your body and with your relationship to food, you're able to say, it's not loving to myself to eat all of these junky foods. Like I feel sick afterward. And this is something like I'm always in an evolution of working on myself, because I love coffee. Like I love coffee so much, and yet it destroys my stomach, and I have like really sensitive stomach. And so I really can't eat or drink coffee products or even tea products. And that's such a devastating thing for me living in a cold country, right? I always want a hot beverage in the morning, but I'm teaching myself over and over, like, this isn't loving yourself. Like loving yourself is actually blessing yourself with a happy stomach, like all day, and a happy body that's just going to be, you know, have peace and joy and energy throughout the day, instead of being medicating and trying to make up for that sort of splurge that I had in the moment. And so we talk a lot about that. And we talk a lot about setting ourselves free from the power that food has over us, because I really never want to be mastered by something, especially an inanimate object that isn't even, you know, trying to manipulate me really. Like, I know the marketing scheme is out there and they are trying to manipulate you into eating those foods, but the Oreo itself is not trying to really get me to eat it. And so when I feel like I have like that thing has mastery over me, I really don't like that feeling. And for me, it's a lot of times it's coffee. I don't want to feel like coffee is like such a big thing in my life that I have to succumb to that and get the coffee when I feel like I'm craving it. And so we talk about that. And in the end, I really want my clients to be able to walk away. And instead of feeling like, ooh, I better walk away now or else I'm going to eat that food, I want them to walk away feeling like that doesn't even appeal to me anymore. I'd much rather enjoy the fresh taste of a peach or a mango or some fresh fruit or veggies, or even the sweetness of like the less sweetness of a homemade object. So I've been making a lot of sweet potato brownies lately, or healthy cookies. I'm kind of exploring some recipes. And so I actually prefer sort of not having that much sweetness, or just, you know, having like the chocolate chips in it rather than like the whole thing being doused with sugar and then having chocolate chips on top. It's like just the chocolate chips is enough for me. So just kind of learning to appreciate simpler things and not feeling controlled by food, and learning to love ourselves, like truly love ourselves, by making the best decision for our bodies. And the best decision is not what our lower brain is trying to tell us, like you have to have that thing right now. So yeah, we talk a lot about that.
That's a really good point you made just now when you're talking about the chocolate chips, just adding it to a part of the dish, not the whole dish. Or you also mentioned sweet potato brownies. First of all, I've never heard of those, but those sound really good. Mm-hmm. I think, and like, as I think about it, as I was listening to you explain it, I think I've kind of done that with my transition. I went from the Midwest, like I mentioned. So a lot of what I ate was like cheeseburgers, chicken tenders, steak, and stuff like that. and you get used to that. And there was always like soda. We drank so much soda pop is what we call it there. Mm-hmm. So much of that. And my parents had a restaurant. So you had access, unlimited access to the pop machine. Mm-hmm. And was so used to the tastes, everything being super hyper palatable. And then when I made my transition, it was, I guess, tough in the beginning in terms of taste. But then after doing it for so long, you said earlier, like you walk past the chip aisle in the grocery store and you're not even really interested. Of course, everyone indulges here and there, you know, mm-hmm. and as vegans or vegetarians, there's like Beyond Burgers and Impossible, but you know, there's all these things that exist now. But for the most part, I don't crave Skittles or Snickers. I'd rather have oatmeal or a banana or something. And if I do by chance happen to have like a Sour Patch Kid randomly or some candy that's vegan that I can consume, it's like overpowering in terms of its taste buds. Like they change over time, and it's good if like you start thinking about that, just adding the little things. It's a really good example, I think. It's like, as like I mentioned, drinking soda a lot, and I stopped that, and I'm happy that I did. And then my wife really got into carbonated water, bubbly and stuff like that. And it's like, there's a hint of something there, but it's not there, and it's still zero calories. And it's like, just that is enough to be like, that kind of quenched what I was looking for. So mm-hmm. there's always ways around it. I think that's really interesting.
I think it's really interesting that a lot of these doctors, they really do push sort of a 100% transition. They really like you to just sort of go all in. And for a long time, I kind of hesitated against that because I'm a dietitian and we don't like food restriction and stuff like that. So I kind of, you know, pulled back from that, and I didn't love the idea of forcing people to just give up everything, you know, overnight. But the benefit of it is that your taste buds adjust so much faster. And so, you know, your taste buds turn over about every 30 days. And so if you can just make that transition to, you know, giving up all of the refined kind of sweets, by the end of those 30 days, you're going to realize like the taste of fresh fruit is so much nicer. And maybe when you were drinking soda, like fresh fruit didn't taste all that good because you were comparing the sweetness between the two. But now it's like nothing is better to me. I'm like quite a fruitarian. Like nothing is better to me than fresh fruit. Like I love it so much. And that's the hard thing about living in Canada now, is that in the winter, you don't always have the best fruit, but I totally live it up in the summer, and I'm eating so many mangoes and peaches and grapes and everything that I can get my hands on because I just love that fresh taste. But if I was having a lot of like soda or sweetened beverages or like sweet cookies and things like that, then I just know that it's happened where I've started eating those things more, and I stop appreciating the flavor of natural foods. And so that's where I like the idea of transitioning quickly. So if you are somebody who feels like you're quite addicted to sweet foods, to sort of give those up overnight is going to be really helpful in your transition to eating more plant-based, because you'll kind of recognize, and salty is the same way too. You'll recognize the natural saltiness or the natural sweetness of these whole foods, and then you'll kind of learn to appreciate those. And all these other things will then become like too much for your taste buds and kind of desensitizes you to eat those.
Exactly. I've noticed with potatoes, just plain potatoes, my taste buds now really like those. And before, you had to have sour cream or cheese or mm-hmm. something on them, salsa, whatever. But now it's just or I love broccoli now, and I never did before. And it's a really good example. I have mm-hmm. like cravings for that. So for people listening who have been inspired by the conversation today, and they're considering making some changes, losing some weight, or just generally trying to be healthier, what are some simple, easy things that they could do? They could start now.
Yeah. Well, number one, I would love to have you in my free Facebook community. We talk a lot about calorie density for weight loss and plant-based eating, and I share recipes. So if you're looking to get some more inspiration, then I think that'll be linked in the show notes. So hopefully you guys can join the group through there. But the biggest thing you can do today is really focus on adding in more veggies, more fruits, and more starches as the three kind of primary things. And consider having half of your plate be coming from non-starchy vegetables like Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cauliflower, green beans, greens, whatever it is, that's sort of that more watery type of vegetable. Then if you can fill half your plate with that, and half of your plate with starches like potatoes, sweet potatoes, beans. And, you know, we don't always have to have our plate like separated out like that. Like that could be made into a stir fry where you have a whole grain rice as your kind of starch and then a bunch of veggies on top. So whatever it looks like when you mix it all together, but sort of the concept is if you can have a lot of your calories coming from, I mean, not a lot of your calories, a lot of the bulk in the meal coming from these non-starchy veggies, then you can keep your calories low. And then that should hopefully kind of help you out on the calories in sort of the equation. And so something I didn't talk about really was exercise. So we always think of exercise as being the best way to lose weight. We always think we need to go get a gym membership if we want to lose weight. Wait, that's where most of our brains go. But you could go work out or go on a walk for 40 minutes and burn about 200 calories and then turn around and have a protein bar that has 200 calories in it. And so it's really, really hard, especially when you exercise, your hunger goes up. And so it's really hard to stay under calorie when you're exercising a lot or you're eating high calorie foods. And so sort of when we're talking about that equation of calories in, calories out, we always want to manipulate the calories outside, but actually the calories inside is where most of the weight loss is going to come from. So if you can just, you know, create a big meal that has not that many calories, has under 500 calories in it, and yet satisfies you and fills you up, then you're going to do much better in your weight loss long term. But yes, I do also recommend exercising. It's good for mental health and for the confidence side of things. And so my motto is the same for exercise as well. Don't start exercising unless it's the type of exercise you can see yourself maintaining for the rest of your life. So, you know, I hate boot camp classes, so it would never make sense for me to go to a boot camp class just to lose 10 pounds, because as soon as I stopped going to them because I hate them, I would gain it back or whatever. So I love dance. That's kind of my thing. Dance, walk, run, cycling, anything that's sort of cardiovascular is kind of where my MO, but whatever it is for you, if it's swimming, if it's walking, if it's climbing mountains, whatever it is that sort of gets you to move and that's going to be sustainable and enjoyable for the rest of your life. So those two things, you know, add in more veggies and fruits because they're low in calories and yet they fill you up. And then pick up an exercise habit that's going to be enjoyable, basically.
Something you know you can stick to. That's really good advice. Mm-hmm. We'll make sure to link your website. People can visit that and see your programs there. We will link your Facebook and hopefully people will get involved in your community there. And of course, your Instagram, where you make like kind of bite-sized videos I've seen that are really good, like nuggets of information. So I encourage everybody to check that out. And Lucy, it's been a pleasure having you on the Plant-Based Canada podcast.
I really appreciate you taking the time to interview me today.
This podcast featured royalty-free music from bensound.com. A very special thanks to our guests for speaking with us and sharing their insights. And of course, thank you for listening. The Plant-Based Canada podcast is an initiative of the group Plant-Based Canada, which aims to educate the public and health professionals on the evidence-based benefits of plant-based whole food nutrition for individual and planetary health. To learn more about the show, visit our website, www.plantbasedcanada.org, and stay up to date by following us on Instagram and Facebook at plantbasedcanada.org and our Plant-Based Canada YouTube channel. Also, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcasts.